Everybody, to another edition of Forever Bristol City podcast. We're into the Liam Manning ball era. It started, I'll call it Loftus Road, yesterday. A 0-0 draw against a pretty appalling QPR side, it has to be said. I think they've only won one game at home this calendar year, which is utterly atrocious. I'm joined by my regulars, Mark and Ian, and we'll go through the game and talk about what we think about the first week under under Liam and that decision, etc. I'll come to you first, Mark. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts being on the week? Yeah, how are you feeling? You know, two games unbeaten we are now, for goodness sake. Yeah, haven't conceded a goal. Let's try and be positive. What do you think?
Well, let's look at the positive first. Defensively, we look really strong. Dickey and Viner were outstanding in the centre, headed and volleyed away everything that was put in front of them, was mostly put in front of them and blocked everything. Dickey going forward was a threat at times as well. So that's a positive. The week, a big changeover and getting a player who looks like your son rather than your dad was quite a shock. With young Liam Manning being much more of a textbook coach rather than a manager. So he's got a complete departure from Nigel Pearson, and I think fans will have to take a lot of time in getting used to him. If you're just judging everything on his demeanour and his interviews, I think that's a bit unfair. Give the guy time, because he's a complete departure from Pearson and what we've had before. On the pitch, we looked frightened. We played with the brakes on. It looked like two relegation teams and an utterly appalling game of championship football. No incident apart from the first.
Stop there. Look, there's so few incidents. Don't bring him in your pre.
I was just going to say, apart from the first minute and the last 10 minutes, there was nothing really to talk about. That's what I'll say generally. Yeah.
All right, okay, Ian, your thoughts on where we are and just a brief synopsis.
Positives were we got a point away from home. We kept a clean sheet. Manning saw 90 minutes of reality. You can look at videos and training and see how people are, etc., but that was 90 minutes of reality. I think the team played for him. They tried hard. Nobody down tools. They all put a shift in. He got his substitutions absolutely right, and the defence was excellent. On the downside, it was a dreadful game of football. It wasn't the worst City performance I've ever seen, but it was one of the worst games of football I've ever seen. No shooting. We didn't create any chances. Toothless up front. Lack quality, tempo and pace. Poor service to the forwards, which is normal. Poor final ball, which is normal. Passes were either not hit, under hit, or over hit. And our movement off the ball was absolutely dreadful. So, but I thought the commitment was good. Finishing was non-existent. Crossing until the last 10 minutes was poor or non-existent. Final ball, not very good. In fact, terrible. Shooting, I'd give a 0 out of 10 for. Passing, a 4. Our attack, I'd give us 1 out of 10. So it was a game to forget. But he's now got 14 days to put something a lot better on the table for the Middlesbrough game.
Yeah.
That's what I'd expect him to do. I mean, if I saw the same 11 start against Middlesbrough, then I'd be concerned.
All right,
but okay. I'm not too despondent. I mean, people forget. I looked up some old stuff I wrote, and there was one particular season. There was 12 totally unacceptable performances under Pearson. So let's give the it's one game. Give the bloke a chance.
That's right. I mean, I think there's been a bit of overreaction on OTIB where people saying worst game.
No.
Of
the year. No.
Anyway, overreaction. No. Worst game for 2 years, and all the rest of it. It wasn't a good game. It wasn't a good game at all. But you know, it's a start. You made a point there, Mark, about Liam looking down at the ground rather than looking at the interviewer in the eye. Yeah, I mean that comes with some media training. So I'm sure we've got some in-house experts that can deal with that. But we'll talk about that later on. Sticking with you, Mark, the team, there were sort of howls that Taylor Gardner-Haskins, I'm going to call him now from now on just to be a twat, Taylor Gardner-Haskins was dropped, and in came the forgotten man of Ashton Gate, Anis Mehmeti. Were you surprised at that inclusion? Rumour has it that Liam wanted him at Oxford, but he failed his audition, and it was a surprise inclusion from the start, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was given Anis a perfect opportunity to prove the doubters wrong. But unfortunately, he did everything he'd done in previous games, showed no movement, no aggression attacking the fullback who had him in his pocket. Defensively, he just got brushed aside. I think if he needs to play at all, he needs the ball in space to run into. Because at the moment, he just looks like a player who's on his way out of Ashton Gate. He just doesn't look strong enough in attacking phases or defensive phases. In fact, it looks a liability, because if we're pressing forward and he loses the ball, then the ball's going to be behind him. If the left back or the left sided player behind him is too tight, then there'll be acres of space to attack down that side, because he's too lightweight. I mean, I described him on Bristol as being as strong as an empty crisp packet, because that's what he was, sadly. So he had every opportunity to do something, and he completely failed it.
Kakai had him in his pocket.
Yeah.
The one time in the second half that he looked like he was going to break away, he tried to buy a foul, and the referee, our good friend Mr. Elchingham, would have none of it. Yes.
Well, Kakai, whatever his name was, he just fell down, slipped in the area, and the ball may have just brushed his arm. It wasn't a penalty, but he should have done better. He just got stuck again. He had a player on another City player with him. That wasn't very, very good, because really he should have dropped off to create a space to play him into. But it was just completely messed up again. And of course, if they had exited that properly, QPR, then they could have started another attack. So all that we're crying out for is a penalty that's never going to get given, but it's just another attacking phase that's gone.
Yeah.
Poor Ian, your thoughts
when you saw the lineup and the Mehmeti inclusion and his performance overall? I mean, that looks like £1 million down the pan, doesn't it, really?
First of all, it's not £1 million. I mean, it might add up to £1 million if he did everything that he was tasked to do with the add-ons, and he's clearly not going to do that. So I think it'd probably be closer to 400,000 or even 500,000 at the moment, and we haven't paid all that yet, so I wouldn't get too exercised about that. He looked every inch a League One player. Andy Vyman, I think his legs are gone, because he played in his favoured position yesterday and he didn't do a thing. So when he made exactly the right, if you're going to give Manning some stick, he made exactly the right substitutions. I would have made them earlier at halftime, but he made them. And after that, we improved. I mean, we improved from a very, very low level.
Yeah.
Now, can I just clear up something that's coming in on the comments about Alan Payne said, are we seriously any better than when Nige took over? Well, you'd have to blame your mate Nige for that, because Nige approved had final say on every single player that's come in. All right. So let's just put that out there. Perhaps people can understand why Nige didn't play him. I don't think too many people were clamouring for Mehmeti's inclusion, although Sam Bell hadn't been great.
And he's been called up to the England elite squad this week, hasn't he? Yeah, so-called.
Well, if you contrast and compare Mehmeti's performance to Smythe for QPR, it was light years apart. I mean, Smythe gave Campering probably his toughest game of the season.
I'd agree with that.
Certainly one of them. And that's what you want from a wide player. Are our wide players particularly quick? No. I don't think any of our forwards are quick. They're quick enough at times, but they're not quick.
Yeah.
So he will have seen that. What will concern me, as I said, is if in 14 days' time we don't line up better and we don't play better. Then at that point I'll say, well, hang on a minute, what's going on?
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, as you say about pace, you're absolutely right about Cam. He was given a tough time by Smythe. He had a couple of nibbles at him before the referee quite rightly put him in the book. But again, you know, if we're saying we were bad, QPR were absolutely appalling. And I know Tony Thorpe, who I thought was a good co-commentator, he made a comment. I think one of their lads put in a cross late on and it was park standard. It really, really wasn't good at all. But let's get into the action. And as you started to say, Mark, it looked a very bright start. We powered down towards the home fans' end and shot saved by Begovic from Sykes. But you're thinking, hello, after a minute, is this a shape of things to come? But it was a little bit of a false horizon, wasn't it, that early attack?
Yeah, great. It was a great press by James. And the pressing, Manning favours a high press, and there was lots of it. And you thought we were starting as we meant to go on, because James, I think it was Colback, turned the ball over from Colback, charged into the middle, pushed the ball to Sykes wide, and it was a half shot, half cross, but it should have counted as a shot on target. He didn't really get any power into it, and then when it came back out to Sykes, he was blocked, so he tried to back heel it, but it went to a QPR player, and the attack was over. But in the first half, we were getting 4, 5, 6 bodies. You could see them across the pitch, and it was quite a tight pitch. Yeah. Trying to close down. There was lots of energy in our press. Retaining the ball was poor, but our press looked good. We didn't turn the ball over from that press a lot, but we did press quite high. I think, you know, that'll be a work in progress, and over time we probably will win the ball back, because obviously you've got to be aggressive, and a high press sometimes going to leave you a little bit exposed at the back. It probably means the defence are going to have to play higher up to squeeze the space to the halfway line and try and catch, you know, your opponent's offside. But yeah, lots of energy in the first few minutes, but that was about it really for the first half.
No, it was. I mean, Ian, I've got very few notes on the first half at all really, but 23 minutes, Mometi on the ball, gave it to Sykes. As I say, Sykes, I thought from the last international break, has come back quite strong, but Sykes had Mometi to give a return pass to, or Cornick, but Sykes fluffed that. And then we had a free kick in a good position. Mometi, you know, we get a lot of goals from dead ball situations. And I said, I must apologise, because I was sort of saying, what does Pat Mountain do? So all those dead ball situations that we do get something from, probably down to him. This was a free kick. That summed up the first half, doesn't it? You know, lots of effort, but no quality.
There was no quality, more or less, throughout the 90 minutes.
From 22,
which is why I said it. Sorry?
From all 22 players, it was a poor advertisement.
Oh, yeah. Well, the only player I'd look out there and thought I wouldn't mind seeing him in a City shirt was the right winger, Smythe.
Yeah.
He looked a good player. Looked like he had a bit of an attitude, but perhaps you need a bit of an attitude to do what he did. I mean, once again, somebody's made a really good point on there. Matthew, there was never going to be big changes for the first game. You'll have to give 5 games before we see change. Yeah, no, I think that's probably fair. We can see improvement, gradual improvement along the way, which is what I want to see. But things like picking on the bloke for looking down at issues in an interview, I mean, is that where we are? You know, well, you'd be saying he's not, you know, he's got the wrong jumper on next. I mean, yeah. Yes, it's not a great look, but I really do want a tactician, a strategist, a manager who is going to make meaningful change over a period of time. So I'm watching much more entertaining football. I don't want a stand-up comedian or a politician. I just and he'll gain confidence with that. I mean, this is his biggest job. for people forget, this is his biggest job by a mile, and it's going to take him a while to get into it. But like you said,
we're often accused on here of being negative, but I've just said, look, you know, it's one game.
That's because people don't know the difference between negative and realistic.
Well, yeah,
it's not negative or positive. That is this pragmatic and realistic. You can only, I don't expect us, you know, Manning's here, I don't expect us to go on a 10-game winning streak, right? Because it hasn't happened over the last 2.5 years, so why should it?
Right. Mark, you're
right. Going back to the first half, I mean, what was quite interesting, you probably saw this, and all the viewers saw this, is QPR were like the away team. So what would happen, it was following a familiar pattern in the first half. City would get, they would let City have the ball in their own half, and we were plod forward. So you've got Pring and Tanner playing pinned to the right side, and then you've got Mehmeti and Vyman on the other side. Mostly we were trying to go down the left. I think you hardly saw Tanner going down the right at all. So it was a familiar pattern. James getting the ball, going sideways to Pring, trying to find Mehmeti. Mehmeti's actually pinned to the wing, and we'd lose the ball. Because there was no movement at all. QPR were just set in their positions, and because there was no movement from the City team, sideways, nobody dropping out to play a 1-2, nobody prepared to carry the ball forward. It was a very much fear and slow plodding, and then back to the back four again, and it over and over and over. And it was only the end of the first half when City began to lose the ball, and I think Kenneth Powell was quite effective, their left back, and Willock on the left. They started winning a few free kicks, but City were so comfortable for the first 35 minutes. But like I said, it just followed that familiar pattern. QPR were happy to wait for us to cough the ball up, which and then we did when we did that at the end of the first half and on their left side. Then they created some chances, and that was the first half.
Yeah. Ian, for me, QPR started the second half better. That Smythe, as you said, good player. Strong driving run into the box, shot wide, and then Pringy got that booking for just one too many fouls. But for me, the decisive moment really was on the hour when he made those two substitutions, and it did make a difference. I did feel sorry for Tommy Conway as well, who came off about 10 minutes later with Harry Cornick coming on. And Conway, a couple of people picked up, I don't know who these body language experts are, but there was the video of the players in the auditorium being briefed by Manning, and some people said, oh, Tommy Conway hadn't read the memo. He looked like he'd swallowed a wasp or something like that. But the second half, those substitutions were good, although you felt they could even have happened at half-time.
Well, they should have happened at the start of the game. I mean, if we'd have started with the 11 that finished, I think we would probably won the game. But we didn't, and he made a mistake in doing that. But he's only had two sessions to work with the team, two or three sessions to work with the team, and you're not going to get cosmic change in that time. But certain things become clear, as some people have said on the comments on here. We need to play with two strikers. I don't think it's Conway and Bell, unless we start playing a lot more football. But when Conway and Cornick, until Naki's fit, and when Naki's fit, you can either go Naki and Cornick or Conway and Naki. Tommy's not getting any service. And as I said the other week, having Tommy on our side is a little bit like having a Rolls-Royce engine in a lawnmower. It's just, he's wasted. And hopefully he'll have learnt from what he did yesterday. I think the comments by Tony Thorpe on RTV were absolutely, absolutely spot on. He's not tied to the club in any way. Like, you know, when they get the Canwe club on there, you know, Ali Hines and who's the other fella, Trevor Chalice. You know, can we get across? Can we get wide? And now can he? Now he's on the ball. Can he give it back? And can he? Oh dear God! So I wasn't looking for cosmic change. And a few people are saying, well, you know, we're going to win 4-0 and stuff like this. I don't think it was ever going to happen, because we're just not scoring goals. So that is something. Well, that end of the pitch that he needs to work on, you know. But the issue is not only in the final third. Let's not just sit down and blame the forwards. The formation with basically two wide players in a centre forward doesn't work for us. But the midfield can't give them the ball because they can't create tempo. There's no tempo in our play. It's not quick. It's not front to – and when I say front to back quick, I don't mean lump it. I'm talking about forward passes, three forward passes on the trot.
All right.
And Matty James,
yeah,
good player that he is, and he's the only one of the eight players out of contract next season that I think about giving an extension, he will slow the game. Because it's going backwards and sideways too much. We need to have more forward momentum in our play.
Okay. Well, I know what my views are on the midfield, we'll talk about that later as well. Mark,
just continue what Ian said. Manning said in his interview they only had a few days with the team and they really concentrated on defensive shape rather than spending too much time, with attacking ideas. I think all I'd say to that is, you know, players have responsibility to, you know, show some attacking intent, and they looked frightened to do that at times yesterday. They were looking along the line. I suppose, you know, our problem this season, the last couple of seasons, has been a lack of movement. But what you did see at the end of the game is when you put Taylor Garner-Hickman in the two, Jason Knight could play further forward, and we looked so much more effective because you had a player who could bring the wingers into play. It was exciting to watch, and really, we should have scored from the chances.
Moving Knight to that holding role was a real tactical error, and I don't think he'll do that again.
Well, I think to some extent, it was just caused by we lost all our midfielders, didn't we, to injury. So we only had him left. You know, when James was out, you know, had him and another playing in the two. But he's not a defensive midfield player. He's so much more than that. But his defensive coverage, and I mentioned this pre-podcast, there was one incident yesterday where he covered Tanner and James when the ball was played behind him by Powell to Willock, and he got right behind the man and guided the ball out for a goal kick. He's just got superb engine on him, and we're very lucky to have him. But if we could have if he could be free to play his natural game, which I think, you know, is providing an attacking pivot, then we'll see the benefits of that. But then we've got to put.
But then we've got to put the ball
in the back of the net, and that's something completely different. That's something we're failing to do as well. It's the lack of goals, 2 in 5,
We did finish the game strongly. I've got here 75 minutes. Max, who I thought was competent in everything he did, you know, the punch that lay on didn't go as far as maybe he would have liked, but Max distributed the ball well to Sam Bell. And Sam's pass was a little bit poor. Cornick got it tangled in his feet, and I blame the position of the pass rather than Harry Cornick. But Knight shot over, and then Taylor Gardner-Haskins, he had a shot that went over the top as well. But another talking point in the game, and I think we got away with this one, 78 minutes, Ian Viner on Armstrong. I've seen those given. What did you think?
Yeah, it could have easily been given as a penalty, and I'm surprised Eltringham didn't, because he's not a referee that does us any favour, is he? So, and with the standard of refereeing, I would say throughout the game in this country at the moment, because the comical thing for me is when these referees screw up in the Premier League, what they do, they send them down to us. So we get the sum total of all the incompetence. And there are some referees, I don't think Eltringham ever does Premier League games, does he?
Stroud's another one.
And, you know, all joking apart, I was surprised he didn't give it, to be honest. And when I saw it, at first glance and in full speed, it just looked like a bit of what I call a coming together. But when I saw it from behind the goal and in close up, I've seen those given.
If we had VAR in the Championship, that would go to VAR. Yeah, and they probably get the penalty.
Well, we
on
I think we played QPR a couple of seasons ago when we had that awful decision on, you know, when Scott was taken out. They got a penalty for a similar challenge. I think when Pring did a shoulder to shoulder on one of their players on the right side of the area in front of the south stand, that was a penalty. They were racing for the ball, but he pushed him to the ground. But if you fall down, the player's going down, you fall down with the player, then it looks like a coming together. If he'd have stood upright when he's doing that and the player goes down, then the referee's going to think taking him out. But you fall, you go with the action and fall down, and then you're more likely to, 9 times out of 10, you'll get away with it. But I mean, it was a little bit comparable with Pring's challenge on Smythe earlier in the half, when he took him out on the right side and gave two free kicks away, the second of which he got booked from because they were having that running battle. And that was probably the highlight of the second half, Smythe and Pring's, you know, ding dong on the right. Smythe got booked because of dissent following Pring's challenges. But yeah, it was Armstrong Sinclair should have got a penalty. And to be quite honest, let's face it, for all the penalties we're never given, I think we're due a bit of luck, but it could come back to haunt you if you get another one. So we were fortunate there.
Yeah, as I saw, it was another situation where the referee's behind the action, and a little bit like why Bannon got sent off, obviously rescinded, although it didn't help them. They lost 4-0 at home to Millwall. But if the referee's behind and sort of in line, different position to Bannon, obviously, but you can't see. And as Ian pointed out, when you see it from behind the goal and close up, you know, but then we thought we had a penalty, Ian, a bit half-hearted, 78 minutes, Knight and Sykes linking well as a combo on the right-hand side, put the ball in. Sam Bell claims he was pulled back. I think he was wishful thinking on his part. Ian, would you agree with that?
He could have well been pulled back. You couldn't really see, to be honest, Dave. So I wouldn't say it definitely wasn't. It's happened to him a few times this season. There was an earlier incident at Ashton Gate. I can't remember who we were playing when he did actually get pulled back, and it was a clear penalty. But that is a symptom of the fact that he's not very strong. And he hasn't got that much of a left foot. And that's something we lack. I mean, what Tomo Boy said on the comments, could Pringy play left wing with Sykes on the right in a 4-4-2? He could, but who do you play left back? Because Roberts is still injured. And you'd have to do something like probably bring in Duncan Idun to play left back. So that's a possibility. I wouldn't like to see us try it that much, but I'll be honest. There's lots of things we could do with the formation where we could still maintain our back four. We could play a proper 4-3-3. We could play a 4-3-1-2. But however we do it, we've got to get two strikers on the field, because what we're doing at the moment isn't working, and continuing doing it, you know, Einstein.
It's not going to change.
If you keep doing what you're doing, you're always going to get the same result. So,
Yeah, as I see it, I'll talk about what I was thinking in midfield. As you say, keep the back four intact as it is, right? And I think, you know, it's heresy. It'll be heresy in some people's eyes, but you've made a very strong point earlier, Ian, about Matty James plays sideways and forwards. If you have a midfield, and this obviously assumes Naismith is fit, but if you have Taylor Gardner, Hickman, Knight, Naismith to give even more creativity, and then Sykes playing that wide role. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's your four. Then up front, I think Bobby Lost and Found has said Conway and Cornick up front as a two. That would work. I mean, I'll put that point to Mark, and then I'll come back to you as well, Ian. You know, does that midfield's got a bit of everything then, hasn't it? Because you've got the more enterprising and energetic Taylor Gardner Hickman in for Matty James, and, you know, Naismith for the creativity, and Knight for those bursts of speed that sadly Vyman's not showing any of that. Mark.
There's one player we haven't even talked about who should be available in the next few weeks. Where do you play Rob Atkinson? Rob Atkinson, you can't play him in a four because you'd have to drop Viner or Dickey. So where does he feature? It'll be from the bench to begin with. But if you have him starting regularly, You can't drop Dickey, you can't drop Viner. Does that mean we revert to a back three? Possibly,
well, yeah. Possibly over
time, you might want to play those in a back three. Where do you play Cal Naismith? Cal Naismith's played is a centre back, and people are reminding me that he's never played in midfield. He's either played on the left side or played in defence. I think you could play him in front of the defence. Perhaps in a 3-4-3 as one of the four, or you could. I think that's the only place you could play him because of his passing ability, definitely. But then he can't play in the back four. So where do you play him? And I was surprised he didn't get on the pitch yesterday.
Oh, well, I don't think Naismith should be anywhere near the back four.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, he's a last-man centre-back. He's good on the floor, good anticipating the game. He only suffers when he's playing against big strikers because he gets under the ball. He gets beaten in the air far too often. On the ground, he's excellent. But I think he should be playing just in front of the back four in a defensive position where he can see everything in front of him. He's not the last man, so he could play that what James is playing at the moment. But we've got to play two either. We play 4-1-3-2, but we've got to have some combination with a front two because we've got nobody who can play a lone striker role, nobody who's effective enough in the club.
Right. Ian, you're coming in next. Just want to say what Matthew Seward has said on the text feed. What about playing Knight out wide? That's a position that he played, I believe, for Derby County more than once. And the other thing about Naismith, I've seen enough of Naismith when he's at the back with errors, certainly last season, you know, where he's a liability back there. Yeah. And I think you could have Taylor, Gardner-Hickman and Naismith in front of maybe the back four. But, you know, we'll talk about transfers in a minute. Ian, you were going to make a point there just a moment ago.
Well, there's two team formations I looked at that would be possible. And there is a 4-3-1-2 where you've got your width. Some people could look at it and say, where does the width come from? The width comes from your fullback. So your fullbacks from left to right are Pring, Dickey, Viner and Sykes. In front of them in midfield, from left to right, once again, are Naismith, James, Taylor, Gardner, Hickman. In front of them in the 10 position, if you call it that, is Knight. And then up front, you at the moment, with Wells injured, you've got Cornick and Conway. The other thing you could do, if you wanted to be more experimental, and Manning has played various times with a three, you could play a 3-4-1-2. So your back three, your Viner, from left to right are Atkinson, Dickey and Viner. Then from left to right, in front of them, Pring, Taylor, Gardner, Hickman, James and Sykes. You could actually go Naismith as instead of one of those if you wanted to. And in front of them, the same three, you've got Knight, Conway and Cornick. So you don't need to break what's right at the moment, which is the back four, unless you have to. And you can include, if you've got the other great thing with Atkinson and Naismith coming into the team, you've got more height. So they're a bit better in the air and you can pose a threat in or do better in both penalty areas. But that, touch wood, doesn't seem to be a real problem for us at the moment. So I mean, Knight, in the last six or seven games he played for Derby, he actually played in at least four different positions. He played right wing back, left centre midfield, left wing, right centre midfield. Strangely, the position he didn't play enough, and Derby fans said this, was where he's playing for us, breaking up play in our final third and winning the ball back in the same way that Marvin Elliott used to do. So that's his best position. Hopefully Liam Manning learnt that from yesterday's game, and hopefully that's where he'll play him. So we don't need to be 1,000% experimental and play with seven up front or something like that, but we just need to get everybody in their best position. But the key thing for me, keep the back four, but play with two strikers. And there's, you know, you don't have to play three at the back to play with two strikers.
No, but Andy Vyman doesn't get in any of the lineups you or Mark or me have been talking about. And as somebody else said on one of the feeds yesterday, Andy Vyman, sadly, this season is like Chris Martin was last season. So Gas Edge, that's next stop. You could have the other part of the, you could have two thirds of our very successful WSM combination. I just got this horrible feeling with this bunch of Muppets over there that they're going to sneak into the playoffs, and that'll be a disaster if they come up.
Don't care. Know. I'll tell you what, we haven't mentioned as well, and he's injured, of course, is Joe Williams. Breaking up, yeah. Ooh, exactly. Yeah. I mean, breaking up play. He could play in the defensive midfield role. I mean, strangely enough, there was a couple of games last season, Rotherham away and I think West Brom away, where he was making those runs from deep ahead of the ball and scoring goals. But we never see that at home. Never saw that at home. Maybe it was because teams sat in and he just didn't get the chance to do that. But Where does he?
And he's out of contract. He is out of contract in the summer.
What
isn't
I think
he,
we
Joe?
Want is. So, I think a lot of fans were surprised by that the team had those 9 days off in the last international break. What we'd hope would do, and I'm sure what will happen, is that Manning will have him in every day. He's very much about having individual player plans, KPIs. You know, if you like, and. You know, intense coaching with the team, and that you'll instill some confidence and a better game plan for when we come back and play Middlesbrough. So we will have time to make adjustments. He will have time to work on the attacking side of the game. I think, hopefully, I don't know where Naki Wells is. He'll be able to come back on the bench in a couple of weeks' time, because we've got to start scoring goals. I think we scored, 15?
We scored
15 goals in 16 games now. Now, look at last season. We scored 16 goals in our first eight games.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
I think this thing about Naki coming back, you've got to bear in mind he's a player that scored, what is it, one, maybe two goals?
Yeah, but the thing is he does know, you know, how to run lines, and he's quite a clever player. But he only functions well in a two as well. He can't play in a lone striker. Every player this season has suffered from playing in that lone striker role, because it just doesn't work. They're just not good enough. But also the ball, they're just not getting any service.
Yeah.
Because the way the players play behind them.
Dave Fevs has said on there, why are we questioning the medical team? Do we not look the fittest team we had in years? I don't think we've criticised the medical team in today's episode.
No, I thought we looked very fit. I mean, the level of the pressing was great. Yeah. At the start, and I think we will start.
We're not believing the propaganda coming out from our.
It was just about confidence. I think there was a lack of confidence in the players yesterday. The lack of confidence to get forward defensively. I thought we were excellent, and you could see how fit we were, because how strongly we finished. That came from the fitness. So no, I wouldn't say there was any problem with fitness.
Yeah. Ian, what were you
going to say there? To answer Dave's latest point, we shouldn't have 9 days off. And I doubt very much if Liam Manning would allow that. If it was me, I'd have everybody back in Tuesday. I'd give them an extra day. They can have the Sunday and the Monday off, get them in Tuesday, and then work on all the things they need to work on.
Yeah.
Fitness was a positive. We finished strongly. We've done what we didn't do right in the first sort of 30 minutes. We've done that to death. The reason the medical team have had criticism is the number of injured players. And that's probably might be one of the reasons that Dave Rennie's gone. I don't know. We don't know if he was sacked. Or he said, well, I've had enough of this.
He's worked with a guy for 25 years. I think there's a bit of that in there. And the injury. Well,
We've still got eight out.
Yeah, we have.
Let's not say we've cured the injury situation.
I was chatting to a Brentford fan the other day, and there seems to be a lot more volume of players injured and being out for longer periods. I mean, look what's happened
with Newcastle.
Alex Scott was out for 6 months, and now he's done another knee. It looked a fairly innocuous challenge, what I saw there. And it's he's going to be out 4 months. Now, don't think it's an ACL, is it? And is there an MCL type injury? But, you know, it's we're trying to dig down into things that we don't know. Although saying that, when we were also, both of you were saying, and maybe I said as well, you know, Liam has had a chance to, hasn't had much of a chance to look at the squad. I mean, it's not like everybody cleared off, right, to say to him, look, Andy Vyman's legs have gone, you know, and so-and-so is not playing that great. You know, he should. There are people like Cisse and Mountain there in the background that could say, oh, are you sure you want to do that? Yeah, so...
And Tinian.
I mean, we said there was alleged interference. Is Andy King injured, by the way, chaps, or not?
Yeah, he did his hamstring again. Can I just ask a question? Because Dave's asked this in the chat, and I said the players had nine. Well, the clubs. I think John Lansdowne alluded to the fact that Nigel Pearson's problems was that the players were given 9 days off over the international break. Can we just clear that up? I don't think that maybe wasn't correct. Obviously, the player would have their individual fitness plan, so they did keep fit. What was the story on this? Can we just clear this up once and for all? Apologies.
The players went away for either 9 days or 10 days in the two international breaks.
They came back Wednesday before the commentary came. That's the bloody problem. Right. They were off that length of time.
The thing is, if you're going to work on things like, I mean, Manning would need to have him in. I would think he can do what he wants. He's the head coach. But Manning will need to have him in because there's a lot of stuff he needs to work on. And John Lansdowne, what was the phrase he used?
Unconditioned.
No, that was one thing he said, but what was the phrase he used? Unheard of. He said that teams having that amount of time off during the international breaks, I'm not talking about the players that go away on the international breaks, I'm talking about the players that are left behind, if you will. And he said it was unheard of. Now, he must have been talking with somebody did he mean unheard of at Bristol City, or did he mean unheard of? Because I've been talking to the chairman at 10 other clubs. He'd have to explain that. But he felt there was a danger of the players coming back unconditioned. Now, it's the same when they go to internationals. Callum O'Dowda was a classic. He used to, you know, he would be like injured. International game comes up like Lazarus from his sick bed. Off he'd go to the international, and lo and behold, he'd come back injured. So... And some of our players, I think it was Max and Mark Sykes, didn't play for Ireland. It was Knighty played 2 whole games. So as far as my memory serves me. So, look, it will be up to Liam Manning to know what time off the players get and to get them in. And he will have a lot of training sessions. He can have double sessions in a day if he wants. Say, right, this is what we're going to do against Borough. He'll have a chance to speak to his analysts about how do Borough play, how do they set up, strengths, weaknesses, et cetera, et cetera. And then he'll be able to say, right, so we're going to set up this way. Now, we don't know if, for example, Naki might be back. We don't know. So we need the players that... Assuming that the usual suspects, Max didn't get picked in the Ireland squad this time. So you'll have Sykes in Knight going away. Anis Mimeti, if
Well, Knight, Dave has just said it. And sorry, Dave has just said we will be missing Knight, Sykes, Conway and Bell. I'm not bothered about Mimeti. So as Dave has said, he is restricted into how much he can do.
That's what the under-21s are for. So you can play 11 against 11.
If you're still imparting knowledge, you can still do 11 against 11, but there's key players that won't be getting the message. Now, he did say in his post, somebody asked him in the post-match presser, what are you doing in the international break? And he said it's going to be a mix of rest, physical and tactical. Now, we know nothing. But for me, right, if that international break in October where they finished on the 7th. They didn't come back until the Wednesday before the Coventry game. That might explain why the opening half of that game was so crap, because they were leggy. What I think would make sense is to say to the lads, right, you can have until Thursday off, right? So give them that extended break at the beginning part of it, and then get them in Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday off, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, leaving up to the Borough game. So you've given them a break. You've given them a weekend experience. They could even have a practice 11 against 11 on a Sunday up at the training ground, yeah? And then you'd have a full normal week's training in readiness for the Borough game, because that's going to be a tough game. They turned Leicester
over yesterday. The point is that you'll have much more time to prepare most of the players than he's had over the last couple of days. Yeah. Yeah? So we should see something more like what he wants to do. But I agree with the earlier point, looking 5 games time. By that time, he's had a really good look at the players. I don't know when the next international break is after this one.
March, Ian. March of 20-something. It always is.
It's right, okay. So he hasn't got the benefit, I think it is this time, or the detriment of the international break to contend with until March. So off he goes. And I think we should see something more. We should see something better against Middlesbrough, especially at home.
Well, one would hope so. It should be a good game. I mean, Manning said they're in Monday to Thursday this week, so that's a more detailed version of what I was mooting. And then Matt Moore said, I think we're discussing what we are, Matt, and rather stupidly, not you, we're discussing an area none of us know anything about. It is literally all conjecture.
Mark, only because of what John Lansdowne said.
Yeah, Mark, you're...
Yeah, I just think this, to sum it all up, I think it's a blessing for Manning that he's going to get those two weeks, because you know, with 46 games in the Championship, after that, it's Middlesbrough, Southampton away, then Norwich at home. Norwich, who are in particularly poor run of form, but the games come thick and fast. He's fortunate he's getting these 2 weeks. Players will be fitter. Some players would have been carrying niggles, so they'll be able to recuperate. And hopefully players like Naki Wells will become available in the past, a proven Championship scorer, but we know he's a clever player. So he'll have the benefit of that and the benefit of working with the players that are available for 2 full weeks. So, yeah, I fully expect a much better performance against Middlesbrough. And it's something fans should look forward to. I think the problem is, because of the changeover, fans still are really worrying that we've gone from one extreme to the other, and you know what's going to come next.
Yeah, I mean, that batch of 3 games that come up after the international break, I mean, it's a bit premature maybe, but they could shape our season. I mean, we are sat there today, 4 points off the playoffs, but if you look, that is off of 6th, then there's a gap starting to, you know, open up just a little bit. Before we say anything else, I'd just like to mention an evening with Jeff Twentyman and Gary Hours. This is one of several such events. They're obviously turning into the Saint and Greasy of the local media scene. An evening with Jeff Twentyman and Gary Hours. The first one of these is on Thursday, November the 30th at the Sartan Club, 7 o'clock till 10, £15 for 2 pints and a pie. I don't know how they're going to make any money out of that as individuals talking, but it should be a good listen. For those of you that don't know, I certainly don't know where the Sartan Club is. It's at Queen's Road in Bishopsworth in Bristol, but they are going around other pub venues. And it won't just be those two guys, because they can talk. They're going to have other guests with them as well. So good luck with that, Jeff, and one of our contributors on here. Occasionally Gary, so good luck with that. Mark, I'll sit with you, ask Ian as well what his thoughts are. Liam Manning said after the game that, no, that's it as far as his backup and support staff. But this week he made quite a crucial signing in a coach analyst. Mark, your thoughts on that first of all? I mean, he went from Arsenal to Oxford. He didn't go from Arsenal to here. So why did he go from Arsenal to Oxford? I can understand why you come from Oxford here, because we are a bigger club than them. But what do we know about this analyst coach?
I don't know. What does an analyst coach do? Tell me. I'm intrigued.
All right, Ian.
Is he there to analyze the team? Is he a number cruncher? Where does he sit in the coaching structure? And coaches move around all the time. Mikel Arteta might have wanted to recruit another person. He may have wanted to leave for personal reasons. People move jobs all of the time. It doesn't necessarily mean just because they move to a League One team that there's any issue.
Well, he was at Arsenal for 8 years prior to going to Oxford, and he's not been at Oxford very long. I mean, that was an interesting job title, Ian, isn't it? Analyst coach or coach analyst. What do you think of that?
Yeah, one would think he might work with individual players in terms of, right, let's take a look at how we can get another 5% out of Jason Knight. Let's see. Let's look at the setup. There's all sorts he can do. And then he might move onto the grass to help a player improve. I mean, a player that we've all said needs a lot of improvement is Anis Mehmeti. So perhaps he could take a personal interest, do a lot of analysis. Why isn't he performing? Because we all know he's not. And he doesn't look as good as when he first arrived at the club. So whoever's been coaching him up to now hasn't developed him as a player. In fact, if anything, he's regressed, in my opinion. And I can only base it on what I see on a Saturday, normally, as a fan. So I think we're, if he needs the guy around him, and they've all got their, people they've worked with for years, bit like friends and family, isn't it? You take people with you to do certain jobs that you trust, and you will inherit some very good people when you go to different clubs. So it's just a matter of building up a backroom staff that works for you. It'd be interesting to see, for example, if we replace Dave Rennie, or we say, well, no, we'll go with what we've got. We'll go with Andy Proctor and co. So let's see. Because I think I'm right in saying that Dave Rennie did a lot of the medicals as well.
He did. He was often featured in the... he was showing players around the HPC, but doing all their tests and everything like that. When we started, we saw that several times with new players that came in. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, on the feed, David Shilton, has made a good point. Says, I'm not expecting any real change in the way we play until January. Anyone expecting a bounce from a team that was playing at the limit of the available squad is going to be disappointed. And I think that's a reasonable point. And it depends how quickly, we get some of the missing players fit, and B, how Liam Manning and his assistant, Mr. Hogg.
Graham Hogg.
Chris Hogg, if he can impart their ideas and get them over, because that takes a while. But if you look at the impact different managers can make with the same players, and you look at top level people, look at what Unai Emery's done at Villa. Look what Eddie Howe did at Newcastle. So
look what Steve Cooper did at Nottingham Forest last season.
Chris Cooper at Nottingham Forest. It can be done. So let's hope we have that kind of effect. And when people say, there's no money available in January, John Lansdowne didn't exactly say that. But the other thing that Liam Manning might be able to do is bring in some decent loans that we haven't been doing over the years. And that, three decent loan players could make a massive difference to our team. So let's be a little bit hopeful about that if he needs to do it.
Mark, I'd like that to happen, but as I say, we know nothing. Mark, the chairman, he says we have a top six squad, right? And we're within 4 points of that at the moment. A comment on the thread earlier, he's deluded, isn't he, really?
I suppose deluded is a bit far to go, but the proof of the pudding's in the eating. So what was on show yesterday showed you our deficiencies again. Same thing against Sheffield Wednesday. Exactly why we won't compete for a top six. the fact that we're 4 points away from the playoffs shows you what a poor division it is, apart from the top clubs. And I think maybe Leicester will get reined in a little bit, and you think Ipswich might slow down, although they've had a brilliant season, considering they came up from League One last season with virtually the same squad. They've done is incredible.
Well, they're level on points with Leicester now. The season's old enough now, Mark, isn't it, for this not
but
to
yeah,
be...
But yeah, despite us being 4 points off the playoffs, where we've only scored 15 goals in 16 games, we haven't got... our strikers are out of form. We're not capable of giving them chances to score. We look weak in attacking areas. That's something we need to work on, and something we can work on. So until we start scoring goals, until we start entertaining... We're not playing any entertaining football at all. But we were solid yesterday. That was a good thing. We didn't concede a goal. Dickey and Viner have been outstanding. I think our best player this season by a mile has been Jason Knight. But he needs to be freed up to get in goal scoring areas. Until we start scoring goals, we're not going to even. That game yesterday looked like two relegation threats.
Well, I don't think we're going to even flirt with relegation. But I'm looking at the league table as we speak.
We can pull away, and I think Manning will get the team playing football.
But the next three games are quite pivotal, because in the same way that we're 4 points off the playoffs, and that's sixth, because sixth is Sunderland on 26. It then goes Preston 28 and Southampton 30. So we're 8 points off of fourth, right? So we're one of a clutch of clubs from Preston in fifth, I would say, down to Norwich in 16th, you know, that would think they can get one of the playoff places. But 4 points off the playoffs,
We could easily lose the next two games.
We could easily win.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, Middlesbrough. I mean, looking at the form, Middlesbrough at home and Southampton away. We could easily lose those two games.
And what I'm pressure saying on there the is then Birmingham, well. Who having a shit season now under Wayne Rooney, but Birmingham,
one point in from five games, isn't it?
Birmingham are in 19th, Swansea in 17th. They're both only 3 points behind us, and you know we're in that. The next three games will determine whether we're in.
Well,
that
we need
14th,
what we need to do. 17th. We need if we can start. We need to win a few games back to back, but we haven't won two games all season. I think last season we only won two games in a row right near the end.
No, we're 32 games since we won two games back to back. That's
the problem. We can't win two games in a row.
Unenviable table in fifth place. It was last weekend where it goes, I think it's Forest, Green Rovers, Rotherham, Shrewsbury, Everton, and then us. Mark, mess around a bit. I said Lansdowne didn't say top 10 squad. He said top 10 budget with enough about us to outperform that level. I mean, it's a little bit of a play on words there, isn't it? You know, I mean, I use the term deluded in terms of his expectation. Mark said that was too strong. I think you might agree with me. Deluded is the right word. Yes or no?
Yeah, I think...
Ian.
Yeah. I don't think he's deluded. If everyone is fit and on form, we've got a top 10 squad. Could it overachieve? Yeah. But everyone would have to play really well. And for that to happen, we can't do the everyone stay fit bit. And then somebody's going to come on and say, well, nobody ever does. Okay. Then you have to allow for that. And the two ways you allow for it is you have a slightly extended squad, or you say, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to bring the under-21s through, and they will play in their best position. So if you lose a left centre-back, you don't shift Cam, bring in one, and play Aidan Roberts at left-back. You bring in Idahun, Arroyo, Campbell Slowey, or Knight LaBelle to play in their favoured position, if that's the way you're going to go about it. So that's what I think we have in terms of top 10 wage budget. If you look at our wage budget when the accounts come out in a few weeks, you won't see a huge change from the year before, because the bit people forget is that when players left, they left in that accounting period. So we've still got at least a proportion of their wages. It will be the set of accounts after that. So instead of our 22-23 accounts, it'll be the 23-24 where you see the real cut in the wage budget. So, I think to say we could go top six the way we're playing at the moment is ridiculous. But in terms of the quality of the squad, if we can keep the vast majority of the key players fit, then it's a top 10 squad and we could push for the playoffs. Because as Mark said, it's not the division. I thought it'd be a really, really difficult division this year. But what's happening is that some of the bottom clubs seem to me, we're 11 points clear of relegation at the moment. The bottom clubs seem to be getting cut adrift, but some of the ones at the top seem to be moving clear. So that leaves an awful lot in that middle area, I'll call it the middle area, where they think, blimey, if we could win two or three on the trot, we'll
that's
do it. This.
But and that's 15, equally, that's like 15 clubs, Ian. Yeah, if you say
the top four, it is. And they'll all have that hope, and I'm sure they've all got injuries, but ours have been ongoing for a long time. So whatever happens, that needs to be sorted out and investigated. And if it's something that, oh, well, that's just the way it is, there's nothing you can do about it, then the only way around it is the two things I've said, the bigger squad or rely even more heavily on the under-21s.
Yeah.
Simple. I can't see another solution.
Not naming a full bench yesterday seems a little bit of a silly move because, you know...
It could tell you that that he's had a look and he doesn't think the quality is there. Or he wants to see some of the under-21s, don't want them on the bench... But I think he'll spend a decent amount of time. I don't know if we've got any under-21 games over the next couple of weeks.
No, I don't know.
I think he'll spend a decent amount of time looking at them to see who may be available for the step up. Because we keep talking about how good our academy is. And we've brought players through. So there's a point at which they either have to go out on loan to a decent club, somebody in League One, League Two, or they have to come through in our team. And so those are the two alternatives I can see. But you need to believe in one way or the other.
Yeah.
Come January, you've got the loan market open again, and there will be some good players available. So,
and there's players coming back. I mean, I'm itching to see McCrory play, you know. And I mean, again, you know, would it be that bad a thing going back to a back three? You know, there's lots of options. Right, I just want to wrap up now. Mark, any sort of final thoughts from you? I mean, it's an interesting 2 weeks and then an interesting 8-day period with those three games, because that can determine whether we're in the top part of that middle group always slipping into the bottom half. What are your thoughts? And you know, over the next, what are you going to be thinking about City over the next 10 days, or going to put them to the back of your mind?
We'll be watching interviews with Liam Manning that will be floating across the Robins TV, and we'll be absorbing what he said. But don't read too much into his demeanour. He's probably a little bit more like Sean O'Driscoll, and he's a coach, and he talks, you know, like a textbook coach. Because that's what he's done for the last 7 years, lived, breathed and has eaten the coaching manual and has
put that 17, 18 years.
That's what he's done. So what I'll accept he'll do, because, you know, from what I've read about him, he's a workaholic. He'll be doing his damnedest, him and Chris Hogg and his team, to get the players ready for the Middlesbrough game. And I'm sure that we'll see a much better performance on the pitch from that team. There'll be a great crowd there. Plenty of fans will come from the northeast, and it'll be a fantastic night. And I just hope we give the fans some entertaining football and get at least a draw, because I think that'll be a fantastic result against a team.
Did you say a fantastic night? Is it It's a 3 o'clock kickoff, isn't it?
Or
is
well, the game.
Well, it'll be dark. I know it's confusing
I was speaking figuratively. Sorry. So yeah. we give the fans something to go home happy about. I mean, you can even if you lose the game in an entertaining game and we score a few goals, I think the fans will go home happy if they've seen that because the Aston game. If we were competitive on the pitch, we go toe to toe with one of the league's best teams. If we got narrowly beaten in a high scoring game, and we look like we turned the corner in terms of making Aston Gate, you know, a place you want to go to watch entertaining football, then I think we'd be pleased.
Well, the key thing we've seen Dross there, haven't we, this season?
The
key thing about Carrick's Middlesbrough is that if we beat them, we leapfrog them. I wouldn't call them one of the leading teams. I mean, they were based on last season's, but that'll be a
like last season. They started off awful, didn't they? But they won about five or six games on the trot. And even after losing Chubak, Pom, players like Cameron Archer, who went from Villa to Sheffield United, they had a handful of loan players. All those cleared out. So they brought new players in. Took a bit of time to bed in, and they're really showing their strength now, where you'd expect them to be challenging for the top end. So we might be leapfrogging them, but I think they are one of the better teams in this division, and they will challenge for the playoffs. You'd expect that. So it'll be a very tough game, but not one we can't get something out of. Let's see what happens.
Let's see where we go. Ian, your final thoughts and Mark's usual optimism. I mean, we don't want to be... I want to win against Borough, draw absolute minimum, because if we lost that, Southampton's not going to be easy. And then it's a pressure game for Norwich, who might have a new manager, although David Wagner won yesterday, I believe, so he's got a stay of execution. But next three games, you know, he's not going to get an easy ride from some people, Manning, is he?
Well, he's not. But you go into these games, what you don't do is what we've done on a number of occasions over the last 3 or 4 years. You go into games and you hear this glorious expression, free hit, right? Hate it. You go into every game and try and win it. Mm. You don't come up with this, well, we're Bristol City, we're not really worthy, we haven't got parachute payments, sick and tired of it. Go out and win the game and go out and try to win the game. Play attacking front. Exactly what's been said on the tin. Attacking, front foot, high pressing football. Now, if we got the fitness, we can do it for 90 minutes or biggest part of. Or you can do it for long enough to get two or three goals up. And then you can sit back. And I'm not saying relax, but you don't need to be pressing quite as high and pressing quite as much because the game's over. So that's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting to see the attacking front foot football. We know we're solid. Pearson's made us solid. He also stopped us scoring goals. I mean, Mark talks about the season before when we got 16 goals in the first 8 games, and then they completely and utterly dried up to below a goal a game. So that is something that we haven't had that. I'll call it a balance. And we haven't been a goal-scoring team since the WSM broke up. Mm. And they really had one top season, didn't they? So I'm hopeful that given the time he's got with the players and possibly with some of the injured players returning, we know that Eamon Benarous and Rob Atkinson have been back on the grass for a while and they were joining in full training the other day. So let's at least hope for a much stronger bench when we take the field against Middlesbrough. But I really don't want to see the 4-2-3-1 formation again, because it you know, we just need to put our hands up and say, well, it works for some teams, it's not working for us. And let's get the two strikers in and let's try and be more on the front foot, because we haven't been, we don't look like scoring goals, and we haven't been exciting, let's tell the truth. So, right. so let's hope it's a lot better against Middlesbrough. And given a bit, he's got a lot more time. Let's hope that it all happens.
And let's hope we see something. I mean, if Weimann and Matty start, I'll be very surprised. Weimann getting a brace of goals, because when he does score, Andy Weimann, he does get them in glitches. So I hope for his own personal career sake, and obviously for the club as well, that maybe he does come back. But both of those, as Ian and Mark have both said, you know, Manning must have learned that he shouldn't really start the next game with either of those two in there. Somebody said something rather concerning, was that, you know, we work to budgets, and, you know, could we send Taylor Gardner-Hickman back on loan back to West Brom and free up the £1 million that is the agreed sum there? I hope that doesn't happen, because over the last few weeks, Taylor Gardner-Hickman, I'm giving him his proper name now, he looks a really promising addition to the squad.
Yeah? I think that would be an utterly, utterly daft thing to do.
Yeah, it would. But, you know, well, if anything like that happened, it would be utterly madness. I'd like to see some loans. I'd like to see some loans come in as well. I don't know if there's anybody at Oxford that he might try and pull up, but, you know, it's lifting people from League One into this level. You know, is this season a work in progress? Have we just got to accept where we are? You know, and if we finish 10th? No, should we? But, you know, but some people, you know, Ian, there's that group of people say, oh, I'll be happy with mid-table championship side. Yeah.
And a lot of people are happy, are absolutely content with championship football, and will be content. They'll go down there and they'll buy a season ticket for the next 10 years. And
I think the thing is, we'd like to see...
Good luck to them, but that ain't me.
We'd like to see attractive championship football and flirting with the playoffs and scoring goals and winning games 3-2 or losing them 3-2. But
well, there's no reason, David. If you get the recruitment right, big thing, you get a style and you get the players to put that into action on the pitch. You've seen it at other clubs. Haven't spent a lot of money. You can do it. Why can't we?
Well, so there you go. Ipswich Town being
Luton
case.
Town, Barnsley.
Currently, look at Ipswich. Yeah, because even, you know, Mark, we've all been critics of Mark Ashton, but he's been controlled up there. He's not been given the keys to the bank, maybe like happened here. But Ipswich, that ain't no fluke. They're up there.
And they took a chance. They got Kieran McKenna, who'd been an assistant manager, good CV, worked his way up, never managed a club before. Lots of Ipswich fans would have said, even in League One, you know, a team who've won European Cups. Remember, they won the UEFA Cup. I know it was in 1981, but they've actually won cups, even if they are the country cousins from East Anglia. Yeah. They'd have gone sniffily. Kieran, who? Look where they are now. They stuck with him. Yeah. Look what he's done.
And like we'd have done if we'd have gone foreign. And what would we have thought if we'd have ended up with that Figuentes or whatever his name is?
Marta Cifuentes. Yeah.
Cifuentes. Yeah.
What if we'd had Roberto De Zerbi, who's at Brighton?
Yeah.
He'd have been another bloke. What's he ever done?
I know. It just shows, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's the luck of the game. Anyway, everybody, thanks everybody who's listening. The audience building. We're getting lots of subscribers on YouTube. So thanks for that. Thanks for your comments as well. Yeah, you know, but mainly positive. I know I've got the Ready Breck look. I'm going to get rid of that background picture on here. I'm not going off for my Ready Breck now. I've already had some.
It would be nice though if you mentioned things enough. Then you know you might get supported. Years ago, there was about Janis Joplin, because she spent so much time. I think it was with Southern Comfort. She basically was selling bottles on her own for just appearing bit so often. So if you mention Ready Breck enough, David, you might find one day you go outside your front door and there might be a van with boxes.
You never know. And I'm looking at your shoe collection behind Mark. I don't know whether you wear those pink trainers. I don't know whether they're
the Marcus of YouTube.
Yeah,
that's me. Anyway,
let's call it a day there. Let's call it a Sunday. Have a good international break, everybody. Don't take too much time off. We want you back and ready for November the 25th. But thanks, everybody, for watching. All the best to you all. Cheers. Bye now.
God bless all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm feeling happy today. Going to put my cares in a whistle. Blow them all away. What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he stops throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, cheer up. The sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When red robins are bubbing along. Red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, cheer up. The sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.